This is side two of session 34, recorded on March 26, 2007. And we're continuing to read Panic Noise, Croker section. I just want to point out something. You notice in the book, who is or what is on the right-hand page opposite Croker's left-hand page section?
That would be excerpts from Bob's radio show.
Or just me.
It's, yeah.
So I'm positing me off of Croker. That's how the book's organized.
Right.
I mean, I am at the beginning. I start on page 75. At the beginning, I'm opposite LaRouche. LaRouche's last few pages.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm opposite Croker.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to point out how to visualize this.
Right.
So you have me interacting on the radio, user-friendly, while on the left you have the Leviathan huge android meme wiping out the chemical body.
What's a Leviathan?
That was Thomas Hobbes' description of the new visually biased printing press state of, say, 1600s.
Oh.
The Might is Right came from that book, or that author, Thomas Hobbes.
The
monster big state, nation state.
Uh-huh.
Leviathan, which I think technically referred to a whale.
So was he being, when he said Might is Right, was he being cynical or serious?
He was being serious. He was saying that the state, to manage its huge environment, now had to recognize that the environment was bigger than human values, and that nature and the human was now the content of the state.
So I got cut off mid-sentence, so I'm going to start at the beginning of this sentence here.
Right.
Now it is the postmodern body as spaced, linked together by force fields, and capable of being represented finally only as a fractal entity. The postmodern self, then, as a fractal subject, a minute temporal ordering amidst the chaotic entropy of a contemporary culture which is winding down, but moving all the while at greater and greater speeds. Similarly, the social as mass vanishes now into the fictive, as in fictitious, I guess, world of the media of hypercommunication, cut only by all the violent signs of mobility and permeability. The social is already only the afterglow of the disappearance of the famous reality principle. This world may have lost its message and all the grand
receipts.
That's italicized.
Yeah, it's like all the grand truths in quotes.
Mm-hmm. Power, money, sex, the unconscious may also be abandoned, except as recycled signs in the frenzied world of the social catalysts. But what is finally fascinating is only the social as burnout. Burnout is italicized. The world of Hobbes.
That's what I was just describing.
The world of Hobbes has come full circle when the, in parentheses, postmodern self is endlessly reproduced as a vibrating set of particles, and when the social is seductive only as its negative sign, the dark side of sumptuary excess and decline. Thus power from the bounded, reserved and inert flips now into its opposite sign, the domain of the unbounded, spent and violent. And what better exemplar of the unreal world of the social in this condition than music? Music / vibration as servo mechanism enters directly into the postmodern body and passes through it without a trace, leaving only an altered energy state. Everywhere music creates the mood, the energy level, the postmodern scene. Never seen, but equally never shut out, music as panic vibration secretes through the body of the social. Always ready to enter, it is also always ready to circulate. Being itself possessed, it does money one better by creating social relations which require no possessions. It may be, quote, born in the USA, unquote, but it has become universal. Always in time, it, in parentheses, finally, prepares for the abandonment of history. Music, then, with no past, no future, in parentheses, determinant.
No, in brackets, determinant meaning.
No determinant meaning, but perfectly defining, perfectly energizing, perfectly postmodern. The liberal burnout of contemporary culture as taking the spectral forms, therefore, of fractal subjects, fun vibrations, and panic noise.
So we have a beautiful description here of a later stage of McLuhan's discarnate effect, where Croker is showing the chemical body just being torn asunder, and that even the discarnate body, or what I would call the TV body, as becoming strange because they're inside the digital body, which he's describing here. And all the effects, a great inventory of effects in all the older institutions. Because remember, he says, similarly, the social as mass vanishes now into the fictive world of the media of hyper-communication. Not the media of communication, but hyper-communication. So Croker would often criticize McLuhan for being too utopian in his projection of the discarnate state.
Mm-hmm.
Now, McLuhan can't be categorized that easily. It's a facetious objection to McLuhan, but the point is that Croker goes on way past McLuhan's terms of, you know, visual space, tactile space, kinetic space, proprioceptive space, acoustic space, to study the content of the solar theater as it shrinks, not the solar theater, the global theater, as it shrinks, and then these media become hyperparticles themselves, and the unifying situation is music.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I don't quite understand is how you go anywhere from, how you can go anywhere from McLuhan, because McLuhan is talking about the disappearance. Well, when everything's disappeared, what's left to talk about?
Well, in the popular Madison Avenue version of McLuhan, people thought McLuhan saw this as a happy state, a new unity.
Mm-hmm.
For the human race inside the electric membrane. But of course, McLuhan didn't mean that, and he told everybody to turn off TV forever. We couldn't take it. But Croker comes along and sees a world 20 years later that didn't listen to McLuhan, didn't turn it off, and he's presenting an inventory of the disastrous effects on everything from the very idea of social humanity and the disastrous effects on hypercommunication. And I shouldn't say music was the unifier. Music is this energizer, this discarnate fluid itself. And his description of it, where he says, music then with no past, no future, no determinate meaning, but perfectly defining, perfectly energizing, perfectly postmodern. It's not acoustic space, it's digital music. And it's, you could say it's the quantum particle that everybody in every medium is swimming in. So he just takes, it's like Baudrillard used to dance on the toes of whatever the received wisdom was in the world of postmodernism. So Croker takes Baudrillard's advice and dances on the toes of Baudrillard. But he also dances on the toes of McLuhan. And that's all we can do is dance on the toes of what has been given in the analog broadcasting media phase, all the icons. So, yeah, he's not going to go past McLuhan, but and he is updating McLuhan's effects with a vocabulary that he gets from the French postmodernists.
Mm-hmm.
It's, in a way, it's the same thing, describing the same thing. I mean, LaRouche is describing the same thing. Thompson is. They're all apocalyptics. They're all saying we're in a pretty strange, extreme situation, that they come from different literary categories.
They're apocalyptic not in the sense they're prophets of the apocalypse. They're saying the apocalypse already happened.
Yeah.
I wonder if we can say that tactility balances the ratios among the senses, if the digital environment then programs the balance of the ratio between the senses, so that it becomes something that can be voluntarily programmed in a discrete and direct manner, as opposed to something that happens haphazard. As you bring in a new technology, it rebalances the old ones.
Well, that's what McLuhan advocated. But you're talking about balancing the senses. By the time we have Croker's era in the 80s, you have whole media environments are the senses, which is what McLuhan said. Media were extensions. But it's the juggling of these massive environments that is the constituents of the body politic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty hard to do. So looking for a tactility among the extensions was what McLuhan proposed, but since it didn't happen, you have this weird situation where we're watching technology itself in a state of chaos because it fails to approximate a tactile interplay. So we're watching the Android meme fail at balancing itself.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas McLuhan was earlier at a time when maybe humans could balance their extensions, not just their senses. But when that can't be done in the 80s, you get what he says, the social as burnout in italics.
Mm.
So let's go through this inventory of devastating effects on the chemical body and older media institutions, and on the idea that there is even anything for humans to share called the social.
Mm-hmm.
Baudrillard is the one who created or monopolized the discussion of the death of the social.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he said the communists and the capitalists were silly, because they talked as if there still was a social.
Hmm.
But the Android meme, in my terms, has replaced the social.
Hmm.
And the human body, or even the human social, is just torn apart. So let me read this again, what you read, and if you want to stop me and go into any particulars, but it's really an accurate presentation. Panic noise.
Well, maybe we should start picking it apart, and then you should read it as a recap.
Okay. So you want to go back to the beginning then?
Yeah. Panic noise. If Newtonian law of gravity could postulate a real body whose objectivity is established by its mass.
Now, that's visual space. When visual space, under printing press conditions and in the newspaper, established a framework, whereas the medieval body was a little more fluid. Now you've got hypervisual space containing the body, and that's going to lead into the 19th century science of chemistry. So he says a real body, italicized. So he postulated something with mass, right?
Yeah. The quantum law of postmodernity eclipses this body, i.e. this visual space body we're talking about, by flipping suddenly from mass to energy.
Yeah, the energy is something you can't see. You can hear it. That's why music comes in. But its mass is a visual-bounded thing. So he's going to keep describing the loss of the boundaries. But it's not visual boundary. It doesn't enter into a visual boundless thing. It is an invisible boundless thing.
Mm.
The music. So in a way, it's a replay of McLuhan. We're going into acoustic space.
Well, remember earlier we defined that to visualize boundlessness in visual space, we think of infinity.
Or empty.
Yeah.
Infinite in going off into the distance and empty.
Yeah. And
but the quantum...
But eternal acoustic space, we think of the word eternity.
Yeah, for simultaneity.
For simultaneity.
And the but now we're looking at the quantum body, and it's energy as opposed to mass.
We now live in a hyper-modern world where panic noise, the electronic soundtrack of TV rock music in the age of advanced capitalism, white sound in all the future shops.
Future shops, in quotes, it's like people, like those are fads.
Mm-hmm.
This is the future. Future's going to be 6 months.
Mm. Yeah.
So this noise, we're panic noise. Now, oh, this is, here's the point. It's not acoustic space. It's acoustic space desperately trying to keep up. So it's panic noise and panic music. That's the difference.
Hmm.
McLuhan didn't describe panic acoustic space.
Oh, well, how do you separate noise from acoustic space?
You don't. I'm saying that this is panic noise or panic acoustic space.
Uh-huh.
People thought McLuhan was celebrating the retrieval of acoustic space.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't see that it would come alive and panic. That's what the Android meme does, and that's what Croker's describing. So this is panic acoustic space. Panic.
Well, I don't know if we could say it comes alive. We could say it takes on a life of its own. That
yeah,
would,
right.
I think, be more accurate.
Well, it's probably the same thing I mean when you say it that way.
Well, every time you say come alive, I always think, oh, it's turning, it's become an organic sentient creature. No, it's just taking on a life of its own.
No, you mean it becomes a human shape.
No, it becomes a living thing with a self-awareness or something, like an animal, or becomes, you know, alive in the sense of a biological entity. But that's different from taking on a life of its own.
Well, you're putting an anthropomorphic definition of what consciousness is.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Right.
I'm not going to limit it to that. I say the way this panic noise energizes society from the 80s on, most people are interacting with it as if it's as alive as any other organic consciousness.
I mean, you make it sound like it could be part of one of the pantheon of the Greek gods or something.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a god. It's an energy.
You make it sound, it's an entity, like it's doing its own thing, and it knows what it's doing.
Right, and that's what Croker means, but it's panic noise. It's noise panicked.
Yeah.
Now, we could say the programmers are panicked, but it takes, the way he describes this, it's an energy on its own. And it appears a kind of effective hologram. It appears to be something that affects us. So in that sense, he's saying it appears to be alive.
Yeah.
If you think of effective as having an emotional or some kind of response in the human,
mm-hmm.
appears a kind of effective hologram, providing a veneer of coherency or tactility for the reality of an imploding culture.
Mm-hmm.
A veneer of coherency would be like faulty tactility. If we assume tactility is efficient and does its job and makes us have a feeling of coherent consciousness, this is a veneer of it. But that's good enough.
Yeah.
You're in a panic state. Either us or the music.
Well, when he says white sound in all the future shops, white sound or white noise is a sound in which your senses can project any acoustic hallucination it wants to.
Right. There's a lot of hyper-panic making going on in this situation.
Oh.
It's a hyper-modern world where panic noise appears a kind of effective hologram. It appears to be alive, providing a veneer of coherency for the reality of an imploding culture. People want it accepted as being alive because it provides a veneer of coherency.
Right.
So when mass disappears into energy, then the body, or the visual space or chemical body, then the body too becomes the focus and secretion of all of the vibrations of the culture of panic noise.
Mm-hmm.
Becomes the conduit for this.
Right. And
the next section is really beautiful. What were we going to say?
Well, as a complement to this idea of white sound or white noise, panic noise, when I was reviewing your interview with Croker that you did earlier a couple years ago with Evan Ray.
Part one,
yeah. I jotted down a note to myself where he says he's trying to open up a space of difference inside the intensity and white light of the speed of a technological culture.
He says white light?
Yeah, so there he's saying that the eye is blinded into, like, white light noise where you could hallucinate anything into it visually. But here we're talking about panic noise where you could project acoustically anything into a white sound.
It could be panic tactility. All the senses of the chemical body have been so usurped by the newest extensions. And then those extensions are panicking, so therefore the original five senses are in a real state of hallucinating delusion.
Yeah.
And that would show why people run around and go to ridiculous things like Disneyland, or all that they are silly things that people say is a dumbing down of America. No, it's a dumbing down of the chemical body senses, and not really a dumbing down. It's just looking for any kind of security. And it'll grab anything.
Well, people have been going to Disneyland ever since it was made back in the 50s. I mean, it's just an attraction for, you know, where you take your kids, because it's fanciful.
That's Disneyland, but
fun.
You go to Epcot, it's a total different hologramic, more advanced environment.
Oh.
You know that.
Well, I haven't been there.
Oh, okay. But the thing is, it's way more sophisticated sensorium massage than Disneyland in California.
Oh.
Anyways, the thing is, we got a perfect description here of the phases. Indeed, the postmodern body is at first a hum. You know, it ain't a chemical body. It's a hum. Then a good vibration. So you could say a hum is in the 50s. The good vibration is the 60s postmodern body. And then we get hyper in the 70s and 80s, and you get the final stage, the after image of the hologram of panic noise. The body is just an after image of the hologram of panic invisibility, or what they say in new physics, strings or dark energy, dark matter. These are all visual space scientists trying to translate the panic noise back into a visualizable simulacrum.
In terms of symbiotics, it's a sign.
Yeah, yeah. But if you think of a sign as a visual thing, then that word doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
The performers are the signs within the hologram.
Mm.
The celebrity worship. The Britney Spears, the Madonnas, the U2. They're the signs, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you think of the sign as something you see. But music might be what you call a sliding signifier.
Mm-hmm.
So this chemical body is invaded, lacerated, and punctured by vibrations. No longer just good vibrations, punctured by all kinds of vibrations. The quantum physics of noise, that becomes string theory. Quantum physics of noise. And I'm punning on strings as well. The body simultaneously implodes into its own senses and then starts experiencing white noise, white sound, white tactility. And then explodes as his central nervous system is splayed across the sensorium of the technoscape. So all the parts of the body become their own worlds.
All of the parts of the android meme body. See, this is hard to relate to because, you know, the average person does never experience their senses imploding and their nervous system splayed across the sensorium of the technoscape.
Yeah, they do. Everybody's on lithium, Prozac, on drugs. The chemical body is a ghetto, and it's easily programmed and a nuisance. So
those are drugs are mild compared to LSD, and on LSD you don't experience the implosion of your senses.
Oh, yes, you do.
Speak
for yourself, buddy.
Exploded, your nervous system exploded and splayed across the sensorium of the technoscape. Never happened to me. It sounds fun.
Well, that's the King Kesey's acid test. Didn't you ever see a light show in the 60s?
Yeah.
The blobulating liquids, that's the central nervous system being splayed across the sensorium of the technoscape. But people didn't realize they were being splayed across the technoscape. They just thought they were being splayed across nature.
Mm-hmm.
But the body simultaneously implodes in its own senses and then explodes as the central nervous system is splayed across the sensorium of the technoscape. That's like saying, if you think of the central nervous system as tactility, that's tactility as white something. White touch.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I was saying a little while ago, that not only the eye and the ear are whitened, tactility is.
Well, that was the theory that Lilly and others used to explain LSD. They thought that it it caused a random sort of white noise activity to happen in the brain.
Yeah.
And in that condition of the white noise, then you could project your own content into your brain.
Which is what McLuhan said you did when you watched TV. Now, so LSD resonates with the TV world, but when you get into the hypermedia world, where TV and radio are quantum particles, what is the central nervous system in that situation? It enjoys crashing.
Mm-hmm.
It enjoys exploding itself. It isn't a metaphysical insight generation. It is a way of trying to remember the chemical body.
Mm.
So you dump it with drugs.
Yeah.
You dump it with Prozac to maintain some kind of stability. The Prozac replaces the old tactile function.
Yeah.
Creates a coherency. The point is, he's describing the body. He's saying the postmodern body, that would be the digital body, or maybe just the TV body, and at the same time describing the chemical body.
Mm-hmm.
So he's mixing the two here. You could say the TV body simultaneously implodes into its own senses. That would be high-definition TV. The development of, better and better television in the 80s and 90s. And then explodes as the central nervous system is splayed across the sensorium of the rest of the media, the digital chip body.
Mm-hmm.
So no longer a material entity. That means it's something else. The postmodern body becomes an infinitely permeable and spatialized field. Now, the tactility originally among our senses organizes each sense's space. The spaces of the senses makes them coherent. But now we enjoy the fragmentation of the senses,
mm-hmm.
of the chemical body senses. So the postmodern body becomes an infinitely permeable and spatialized field whose boundaries are freely pierced by subatomic particles. That would be the older media, in the microphysics of power. It's a very tiny space, right?
Mm-hmm.
Once the veil of materiality subjectivity, that means the idea you have a brain or a soul or a mind in your chemical body, has been transgressed and abandoned, then the body as something real vanishes into the specter of hyperrealism. Hyperrealism is Baudrillard's word. So something real, that was the Newtonian body.
Yeah, I think you'd have to... as I mentioned before we started talking, I was looking at Jean-Paul Sartre this week, and he was a leading advocate of existentialism, and he was one of the first in that lineage to really press the point forward. His belief was that in human beings, existence transcends essence, whereas in other objects, a thing cannot transcend its own essence. It just is what it is. A chair is a chair. A horse is a horse. But a human being's essence is a floating signifier of some kind, a sliding signifier that can be, if it can be deconstructed in such a way that all that's left is existence itself. So I think we can't think about what Croker's saying from the point of view of, say, Plato, who believed that that we did have a soul, or that a soul or our essence was our existence. I mean, it seems to me that what Croker's talking about is the complete deconstruction of the psyche, leaving there's nothing left but existence underneath it all.
Well, if you brought some from the 19th century, suddenly plunked them down in the 90s, they'd think that everybody lost their souls.
You think why?
Because they would just see people with Walkmans and totally absorbed with these little flickering images or media diet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't look like they were human. They're not interacting with a chemical body social space, which a 19th century person would take for granted.
Right.
So you were saying...
you think that the term user is the...
Oh, I want to say something about Sartre. When he's talking about existence, is bigger than essence,
mm-hmm.
or essentiality, it's almost like he's beginning to perceive the area beyond the chemical body, the TV body, or the TV landscape, and that one can live in the TV landscape without having an essence, which would be something reserved for the chemical body phase.
Right.
And so he's saying we're no longer essential. We have something else going on, and he probably romanticizes and projects it back as some kind of larger word existence. But it's actually he's responding to the new environments.
Mm-hmm. So the aphorism user is content.
User is the content, yeah.
Content, that probably applies here.
Yeah, that's the white noise, white tactility, white sound.
I found an analog to that aphorism this week that I thought was good, equally as good as if not even more explicit, which is the view contains the viewer.
The view contains the viewer. What's the view?
Whatever it is you're perceiving.
Sounds like an eyeball reference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, would be, I guess.
So you're saying the view contains the viewer?
Right.
Well, that was the old Zen or Eastern wisdom idea, that the viewer, the object, becomes the subject. The subject becomes the object, or the knower becomes the known.
Right.
That's manuscript culture wisdom. That's visual bias, and that's an antidote for the viewer, the view becoming the viewer, did you say?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's emerging to overcome.
The view contains the viewer. That's what you said.
Yeah, the view contains the viewer. But that, contains, again, is a visually biased term in McLuhan's definition. The view contains the viewer. I was thinking that the viewer becomes the view, but, you know, you're saying it's contained. The view containing the viewer, that would be the effect of the printing press. That made visual space dominant.
Yeah.
You're inside visual space.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't take it that way. I was thinking of just the viewer becoming the view. That was an eye-based manuscript culture trying to overcome the separation that writing in the eye-based culture created, because it advantaged the visual sense, which was a separator.
Mm-hmm.
So mysticism tried to re-merge you out of your visually biased separateness.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what you meant. You're saying the view contains the viewer.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a mediumism message statement within the Gutenberg effect.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, that's right. So user is content is the update on that one. User is the content.
What you said, the user.
The user is the content. That doesn't necessarily limit it to the visual space.
Right. Use any medium.
Mm-hmm.
So you project your own content. That's only one of the effects of the environment.
Mm-hmm.
The totality of the effects is effects on the society that the user is in. But the user walks around projecting their own perceptions, making capability on the white sound, white tactility, and white noise of the electric age.
Yeah.
So we're at this point where once the veil of materiality, subjectivity, has been transgressed and abandoned, then the body as something real vanishes into the specter of hyperrealism. Now it is the postmodern body as space, not just visual space or outer space, linked together by force fields. Now that would be the different media, the hypermedia, linked together by force fields and capable of being represented finally only as a fractal entity. Something that kind of what repeats itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in between, when it's in the force field, is projecting white noise variation. That's the period in between each fractal pattern, right?
Yeah. What paragraph are you on?
The top of page 92, right where we were reading.
Okay.
Yeah. You got it?
Yeah.
So the postmodern self, then, as a fractal subject, a minute temporal ordering amidst the chaotic entropy, that would be the white noise, of a contemporary culture. No, I won't say that's white noise. A minute temporal ordering would be the white noise. Well, it's hard to say. What is it, white noise, the environment, or is it the user? I'm not sure. A minute temporal ordering amidst the chaotic entropy of a contemporary culture which is winding down, there it is, reaching the end of the world again, but moving all the while at greater and greater speeds. And we never completely wind down, and we keep getting what appears to be faster.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the winding down is the slowness that money offers. So we are flipping from greater and greater speeds into a new slowness. Mm-hmm. Winding down.
Mm-hmm. So, I can go back a couple sentences, because you're going kind of fast. Once the veil of materiality and / subjectivity has been transgressed or abandoned.
And abandoned.
And abandoned.
That's the chemical body.
Okay. The veil, that's your subjectivity and objectivity.
Yeah.
Once your subjectivity and objectivity has been transgressed and abandoned, what's left? Then the body as something real vanishes into the specter, I'm not sure what the word specter is.
After image.
After Both. Image of hyper-realism.
Which is the larger, old, big analog media landscapes.
Mm. The I think I've had slight confusion around the word hyper. I think that sometimes I would think I would substitute the word in my mind like meta-realism, but hyper-realism doesn't necessarily mean the same thing as meta-realism.
No, meta is in the materiality subjectivity of the chemical skull.
Yeah, hyper-realism, hyper means, you know, it's happening frantically at panic
speed.
No,
it can, it more means, I think, not that, it means the way Baudrillard meant it, is that the media is more real than what your senses engage.
Oh.
Because you're living in the extension of your senses. It's like Beaver once said that Van Gogh added colors to the sun.
Hmm.
So the thing is, the media world is more real than the first nature world.
Oh.
At least from the chemical body's perception of it.
Oh. Because it knows
the real. It's great.
It knows how to stimulate your senses, hyper-stimulate your senses beyond what nature would normally do.
Yeah, so the 19th century comes into the room and sees everybody ignoring him and reality and totally involved in looking at these objects, but the people looking at these or engaged with these electronic extensions think that's more real than the world that the chemical body thinks is than the 19th century guy thinks he's walking around in.
Mm, yeah, so just imagine a 17th century guy with his Bible in one hand dressed in black and white, and then plop him in the middle of the
Put him at Hyde Park where he starts preaching to the people. And there are cars whizzing by and people with Walkmans and ghetto blasters, and they probably just kick the box out. They'd be very rude to him.
Yeah, but what his experience of being in the hyper-realism of the 21st century, he probably would go into a... It would probably become like a synesthetic nightmare.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he would he'd be in a total state of confusion and alienation and greatly alone.
Mm-hmm.
Emotional stress. Because his reference points, what Baudrillard calls the social, would not be the reference points of the objects swimming around him.
Mm-hmm.
And the people would look like objects. Talking about the social,
but you know, we're always still trying to balance our humanity with our. You know, I was watching the news this morning.
Okay, but take that. That's why we all in the '80s started making money. That was the closest to the humanity that people could get a sense of slowing things down with.
Yeah.
But you were watching what?
This morning I turned on the news. It was either CNN or MSNBC, and this gal she's her own corporation. She's a one-man news programmer. It's called Robin and Company.
Yeah.
And, you know, I noticed how much I was enjoying watching the news, because I was enjoying watching her, because she exudes such a sense of just sort of human nature. She's somehow bringing that quality back into, you know, the middle of this inhuman technological machine that she's being, you know, represented by. So, I mean, the human spirit seems to want to prevail and wants to, you know, we all want to remind ourselves that, you know, people are still here.
Yeah, but that's why you have celebrity culture. More and more people for different types of demographics. More and more celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
More and more attempt to mirror people's chemical body. So this person, you're saying she exudes human, but what is she? She's on the media. She's in the electric environment, broadcasting.
Yeah.
What's that got to do with you?
Well, I don't know. She's just, you know, it's almost like sitting with somebody that's and having a cup of coffee with a nice person. I mean, that's
right.
How she comes across.
It's a simulacrum. It's what he says, the after image of the social.
Right.
So you watch on TV or on the internet, you watch a replay of the TV landscape.
Mm-hmm.
Or the TV body. That's what she is. It's something you can see and focus on. Whereas when you're dealing on the internet, you don't focus on anything for too long.
Right.
So she's a conservative image.
Right.
A conserving image of the chemical body. But it's
right.
Lost in the simulacrum.
And you can go see her on the internet, but then you just get little short film clips and articles and pictures. It's
right.
Not the same 20-minute experience you have sitting in front of the TV.
Now, the ecology of this is she meets a felt need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just like Reagan did, just like Bush did.
Right.
Their image did, at least.
Right.
Bush's image was a non-communicator. That was a great relief for the hyper-communicating environment that people felt was happening
yeah.
in the 90s up to 2000.
Yeah. But also, he wouldn't communicate. He doesn't, you know, whereas Clinton was the slick emoter, as you said. He was a scholar, and he expressed himself brilliantly in the world of ideas. He was charismatic. Of course he would put himself in front of the cameras, talk as much as he could, because he got all this, you know, glowing reception, and it made him feel good. Bush, on the other hand, doesn't know how to read, and so he's probably going to shy away from being in the spotlight in the media anyway.
Well, don't you see?
He doesn't look good to begin with.
Right. So you have the tetrad. Take McLuhan's tetrad. You take a process of hyper-communication that Croker's describing in the 80s, and so you have a president at the peak of that period of hyper-communication, whereas actually there is no social, but people want to project there's a social, so they bring in a so-called good communicator. First there was Reagan. The Bush family always offers release. First President Bush, you know, was not such a good communicator compared to Reagan. But it's like a little tetrad. You flip from Reagan, push Reagan to an extreme, his image dies, you get a Bush. Then you flip out of the first Bush, and you have a super communicator, and then that pushes to an extreme. People tire of that, and they impeach the image, and then it flips into a non-communicator, the Bush side.
Mm-hmm.
And it meets a felt need.
Right. You say they put him in or bring him in. It's not necessarily that some bureaucracy or clan or something. Human beings are strategizing, oh, we'll put in a non-communicator. It just sort of naturally happens that way.
Well, it's hard to tell what's real in a hyper-real reality.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to determine what are the causes and effects and who's pulling the strings.
Right.
If you try to track it down, Baudrillard would say, you're not going to find the causes.
Right. It's the perfect crime.
Yeah, that's right. The perfect crime, one of his books. And then you, you know, in quantum physics, they can't determine the position from the mass or the size.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They've had that problem ever since we entered the electric age. So.
Right.
And so there's room for lots of little cliques to manipulate
right.
the situation because they know they can be protected by the ambiguity of the situation.
But you're still going to have people trying to analyze from all four levels of...
Yeah, there's going to be... What do you get on the internet? Hyper-conspiracy analysis.
Right.
It's an explosion of one meme, one attitude, one way to look at things. And so there's lots of room for people to work within that. Then there's lots of room for people to put down that idea and say it's something else.
Yeah, the four levels of causality or the four levels of power that are laid out on the Bob's Media Ecology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got, we're in the next paragraph, you got the grand receipts. I don't know if that means the grand given. The grand archetypes, stereotypes, or truth, power, money, sex, the unconscious. There's four.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at this next paragraph, so we're talking about this Robin and company broadcasting to people as if there's a social, and you thinking projecting there is a social that she reminds you of.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened to the social? As Croker says in the next paragraph, similarly, the social as mass vanishes now into the fictive world of the media of hypercommunication. That sounds like you're Robin.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what Rush Limbaugh and all these talk radio guys are. They're images of the mass.
Mm-hmm.
Fictive versions of the social. Caught only, Now, McLuhan would say, well, they're not unreal. It's just the sensory complementariness or balancing or juggling in response to a given environment.
Mm-hmm.
It's the retrieval aspects. Caught only by all the violent signs. Okay, so the social is caught only by all the violent signs of mobility and permeability. To show the social, you show it in motion, hypermotion. But it's already only the afterglow, the disappearance of the famous reality principle. And the reality principle was the Newtonian law of gravity, right?
Mm-hmm.
When the body, a chemical body, appeared real.
Mm-hmm.
This world may have lost its message, the post-information environment, in terms of matching, and all the grand receipts, power, money, sex, the unconscious, may also be abandoned, except as recycled signs in the frenzied world of the social catalyst. So that's TV, recycled signs in the frenzied world of the social catalyst. And social catalysts are either the president or the media itself. But what is finally fascinating is only the social as burnout. Everybody is fascinated with catastrophe.
Mm-hmm.
Every celebrity gets wiped out. Because that ultimately is what people are intuiting is going on. Because there is no social. So if there is an effective presentation of the social by hypermobility and jet setters,
yeah,
you're going to watch them get burned out.
Well, we certainly are seeing that today with Britney Spears and the...
It goes back to Elvis Presley. It happens to everybody.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it's hyper now. You got five of them going on right now.
Right.
Yeah, you didn't have as many celebrities in Elvis' time. Just Elvis went through the burnout.
Right.
Or the Beatles. But now, you've got...